welcome back to another episode of Behind the Ginger Stash podcast. For the first time in a long time, I'm sitting in what is pretty much what you would call a man cave. And sitting across from me now is Nick Rossiter.
Hey, thanks for having me back again, Ryan.
Yeah, no problem, man. thanks for the coffee this morning.
Yeah, we're up and about pretty early at this morning, so I thought I'd get you a coffee in one of my comic book mugs, my Daredevil mug.
Tell them about the artwork real quick on it.
Oh, it's Frank Miller. It's an oversized coffee mug, red, Daredevil written on the side, and Frank Miller artwork of Daredevil on the other side. It looks like a real Netflix kind of, you know, Daredevil mug.
It's pretty sick.
It's coming on at the end of the month, so I'm really pumped for season two of that.
It's like you were, like, getting me all ready for it.
Yeah. No, it's, you know, I got quite a collection of these mugs, and that's actually became one of my favorites. My wife bought it for me for Christmas, so it's pretty cool.
Well, we got a pretty special episode of Behind the Ginger Stash today. It's actually our first themed episode ever, except for that Daredevil rant that I just let you have. So I guess I kind of screwed that up right away. But I'm going to take you, Nick, all the way back to February 1991.
Yeah.
All the way back to New Humans number 98.
No, New Mutants.
New Mutants.
Yeah.
My bad.
That's all right.
It's early, man. Yeah. I don't know why I said New Humans.
Yeah, the coffee hasn't kicked in yet.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So anyways, why don't you tell them what that is?
That's the first appearance of Deadpool.
Yes.
In comic books. And it's kind of a standalone, well, big story that, you know, premiered that character to comic books, and it's his first appearance and stuff, and it's worth quite a bit of money now on eBay and stuff to try to find that. For a comic that's a little over 20 years old, it's worth like $600-700 in really great shape, but I don't even have a copy of it. It's really hard for me to find.
Yeah, I've never seen a copy of it. I don't know.
There was a lot of them around years ago. There was tons of them. A friend of mine back in St. John's had a comic book shop, and he remembers back in the late 90s, he had hundreds of copies of that comic book. And trying to find it now, it's just, you know, trying to find, it's insane. It's just gone crazy trying to find that comic now. But yeah, Deadpool's first appearance is in New Mutants 98. Cable's
not New Humans.
Not New Humans, the New Mutants. And actually, that comic only ran till the 100th issue. And then they started X-Force, the comic X-Force, right after it. And it was the same artists and writers and stuff. So they were ending the...
That Rob Liefeld and...
Fabian Nicieza, who were the writer and artist for that comic. They were ending New Mutants at issue 100 and then starting off the comic book X-Force, which is supposed to be another film in the works for, you know, for Fox Studios.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they have the rights to X-Force as well.
Yeah, back in those really really early ones, the New Mutants and in X-Force, you know, Deadpool was a very serious character too.
Yeah,
he was a supervillain more than an anti-hero.
Yeah,
right?
He was. He wasn't so much a tongue in cheek, but yeah, he was kind of an anti-hero. He was killing the people and, you know, that kind of stuff. A lot of bloodshed and everything, but it wasn't the comedic aspect to him back then. That didn't really kick in until the later '90s, and when the other writers started kind of jumping in, other artists. And he started talking to the reader directly. He was kind of breaking through the fourth wall.
Yeah, let's talk about that fourth wall real quick since you brought it up.
Yeah.
So when you're saying he's breaking through the fourth wall, you know, what is it significantly that you're like getting to?
It doesn't happen very often. It's happened a few times in comic books and movies and things like this. But it's something, it's a nice, you know, it's a nice plot device to add into the idea that the character is not only going through the motions of a story, but they're also having a dialogue with the guy who's reading the story or who's watching the story. And it doesn't happen very often where they kind of connect, make that connection. where, you know, all of a sudden they're having a big fight and all of a sudden the guy turns to the camera and, or turns to the reader and starts talking to him and trying to fill in the blanks kind of thing and fill in the details of what's going on.
Well, that's one of the like more significant characteristics of Deadpool, is that actually him as a character is aware that he's a comic book character.
Yes, he
knows.
Yeah, there was a great idea somebody had said about the fourth wall, him break through, because Stan Lee has an appearance in the Deadpool movie, and I was telling Ryan about this yesterday, was that somebody wrote in and said, you know, it would have been so cool in that movie when Stan Lee shows up that Deadpool say, oh my God, Stan Lee is in my movie. This is totally legit. Or something to the effect of
that
saying,
would have been great.
Something that, like, the audience, like, holy crap, he's not supposed to know who Stan Lee is because nobody is in, it's in the movie. It's fictitious. So,
you know, there's one thing that the movie didn't really touch up on that I kind of noticed, is it doesn't really talk too much about the fact that Deadpool has, like, a mental issue.
Yeah, he's, I don't know.
Except, like, for when he takes that knife in the head, yeah. And then you see the unicorn and all that, and
it's kind of a given, though. Like, you know, right from the get-go, like, everything that's done to him.
But if you don't know anything about it, and you walked into that movie, you think if you didn't know already, you would have figured he's, like, basically schizophrenic.
Yeah, which is kind of part of the reason why, like, he does break through the fourth wall, is that everybody's like, who the hell is Deadpool talking to? And he's actually talking to the reader or the viewer or whatever.
It's funny when you read Deadpool comics, and you always get the two thought bubbles. You get the yellow one and the white one plus his dialogue.
Yeah.
And I was reading the other day that in Deadpool, I think it's issue 28, you learn that the yellow voice box, his logical box, is... voiced by Dr. Bong, who's a Howard the Duck villain.
Oh, yes. I kind of remember that character from the 70s, actually.
And then...
because he's got a shape like a bell or something. Dr. Bong? I can't remember. He's a very... There's another character, by the way, that was created as a kind of an anti-hero, as Howard the Duck. So, I mean, there's elements of Howard the Duck in Deadpool.
Oh, yeah, you can see it. The other one, too, is the psychotic voice, so the white thought bubble.
Yes.
Is apparently Mad Cap, who's a Captain America villain.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, you're taking all of the reject villains and counterculture characters that have shown up in Marvel Comics in the last, I don't know, 40 or 50 years, and throwing them in there with Deadpool kind of thing. And, you know, it's an interesting character. The movie is great. The movie is a lot of fun to watch. And, you know, it's an interesting character because it really hadn't been done on a big screen before.
It's a lot better than the first time you see Deadpool.
Yeah, you see him in the X-Men Origins Wolverine movie or something. And that's kind of a throwaway character in that movie. He's not that, you know, memorable kind of thing, right?
No, I mean, well, you get one of the most chatty characters of all time and you sew his mouth shut.
Yeah.
Why?
No, that was it.
Why do that?
Well, I wasn't even a big fan of that movie anyway, to be honest. I don't think I'm alone in that group.
No, you know? It's not a very good movie.
No, it's too bad because, I mean, it was the studio trying to step in and try to make something that really wasn't broken, and they tried to fix it. So, there you go. And it's kind of coming full circle now. Like, these characters that are showing up on the screen now, they're actually doing them justice. You know, they weren't broken in the first place. You know, let him play out. Let him use that, use the characteristics of what made them great in the comic books and put it on the big screen.
Yeah.
And Ryan Reynolds, who's a big promoter for this character, and he really wanted a franchise. You can tell, like, this guy was...
Oh, it deserves it, man.
He was really, really promoting the crap out of this in the last year and a half and last 2 years or whatever. And, you know, this... He obviously knew how popular this character would be, more so than anybody, you know, Joe Blow off the street kind of would ever know. Because, I mean, a couple of years ago, nobody really knew who Deadpool was. Ryan Reynolds did, though, because he knew the character from when he had done that Wolverine movie.
Well, he probably knew the character long before that.
Yeah, and, you know, knew the potential of how good it'd be. I mean, the movie came out, it was an R-rated film, and there was a lot of, you know, there was a lot of really positive attitude about that movie being R-rated. You can't take your kids to it. It's just so extreme. I mean, there's not that many R-rated superhero movies out there. I think the Blade movies are R-rated.
And Ryan Reynolds in that, too.
I think the one based off Mark Millar comic. I'm trying to think of it. Oh, the Secret Service. That was actually an R-rated film, too.
I don't know that one.
That's, my wife bought it for me for Christmas. Just hold on a second. Kingsman, sorry.
Oh, Secret Service.
Yeah, it's the Secret Service is the name of the comic book.
Gotcha. You know, I only watched Kingsman, like, recently, and I haven't seen the whole thing yet. I only watched a portion of it.
Great violent scene in it.
It was like, I don't know, I was drinking and it was late.
The scene in the church
is worth
the viewing, because there's a great violent one-shot, no edits scene of this massive, you know, blood-spurting scene that goes on in this near about halfway through the film, and it's a pivotal scene. It's really beautifully shot.
Nice.
But violent as hell.
Nice. You know? I want to go back to the first appearance of Deadpool.
Yeah.
Have you ever read it? Like, maybe a library version, or have you ever
The guy who wrote it was actually a pretty good writer. He did a lot of X-Men comics, but the guy who drew it...
Yeah, I really want to hear you talk about this for a second.
The co-creator of Deadpool is a guy named Rob Liefeld. He showed up, I guess, around the late 80s, doing a lot of artwork. And his artwork is really not well-received. I'm not a big fan of his artwork. I just found it, like, he draws these characters that are... They look like they're all on steroids. And, like, over, like, on super steroids. Like, you know, and if you're curious about it, you know, Google Rob Liefeld artwork, and, you know, and you'll get an idea that he's not a very good artist. And he did a lot of stuff back then, and he was the artist on New Mutants when Deadpool was created. So he kind of gets the, you know, co-creation kind of credit for, you know, co-creating Deadpool. But he, like I said, he's not a very good artist. And I didn't buy that comic because, like, back then, I wouldn't buy that comic because of Liefeld's artwork.
Really?
It was just a matter of principle because he was just so bad.
But now you're missing out.
Nah. That's all right. Listen, even if I read it, I got a feeling it's not a very good read.
apparently, Cable is in that as well, because I think the story for that is Deadpool is hired to attack Cable and the new mutants. Because he's a bit of a bounty hunter, right?
Yeah. Cable is supposed to be from the future, and
Cable has the most wackiest backstory.
Yeah, because even his first appearances kind of fluctuates.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, because originally it was New Mutants 98. And around the same time, there was a comic book, The Uncanny X-Men, that was coming out. And there's a storyline in issue 201 where Scott Summers and the clone of Jean Grey have a baby.
Do you remember her name?
Madeline Pryor?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. And,
well done.
I don't know. We're going back 25, 30 years here. But anyway, they have a kid, and the baby is whisked off into the future, turned into a super soldier, and then whisked back into the past, into the New Mutants 98, and it's Cable.
Yeah, he's the adult son of Cyclops.
He's actually, I think he's older.
He comes back,
he's supposed to be older than Scott Summers, which is kind of weird because now his son is older than the father, kind of thing. But, you know, whatever. They did a lot of time travel stories in the X-Men back then, so.
You know what would be really weird? Is if if the guy who plays Cyclops in those first few X-Men movies plays Cable in the next Deadpool film, because then he's like father and son.
Oh yeah, there's a few actors that have kind of like been lobbying.
I think he's on that list though.
Yeah, there's a Stephen Lang. I know looks like Cable. There's an actor named Stephen Lang, and he's recently showing up on AMC's show. Oh my God, I can't think of it. But anyway, Stephen Lang, he was in Avatar and things like this. He was in Red Dragon movie, Manhunter. And he's been around quite a bit, but he does kind of look like Cable, and he's all kind of jacked up and muscle and everything, right?
So you weren't much of a Deadpool reader at all then, eh?
Not really. I mean, he wasn't that fascinating a character. I mean, his name was is basically Wade Wilson. It's a takeoff
of Wilson.
Yeah, it's terrible name. It's a takeoff of Slade Wilson from DC Comics with Deathstroke.
And we love Deathstroke.
Deathstroke's a great character, and you know, Marvel kind of, you know, stole and parodied that character. You know, and he's a parody of several different things going on.
Yeah, I think I remember reading something about his costume is inspired by Spider-Man and a bit of his jokes too along the way. Like the more comical he becomes, the more like Spider-Man his attitude kind of is and stuff. But
yeah, exactly. Deadpool is like the merc with the mouth. He's got that. He's an anti-hero. He's, you know, an assassin, and you know, he's just shooting his mouth off, and he's breaking through the fort. There's a lot of characters that they added later on over that 5 or 6 year period after he was created that kind of made him what he is now, because he didn't come out of the box. Literally,
it's not my quote, but I've heard him been called the Bugs Bunny of the Marvel Universe.
No, that's not bad actually. Because he is.
I think I pulled that one from Comic Book Men, the TV series.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It is a funny character because then when they did the film really grabs all the best parts of what they've created with that character. And it was a lot of fun with it. I really enjoyed the movie.
So let's jump a little bit ahead here, and we'll go into about mid-90s, so about 1997.
Yeah.
And Joe Kelly and Ed McGuinness,
yes,
taking over and giving them the first ongoing series. Yeah. You ever read any of those? Or
I'm a big Ed McGuinness fan because he did
you
the
like
Batman
his
Superman.
You like
yeah,
his
he's
art,
an
eh?
Awesome artist, and he's done a lot of great stuff. And know that he did it, and he's actually a good tongue in cheek kind of guy too. Same with Joe Kelly, right? And Joe Kelly is a much younger writer. Ed McGuinness same way, and you know, like these are the guys that really added a whole other element of him breaking through the fourth wall of, you know, the Deadpool that we see in the film. They're the guys that really added all of those cool elements to him that weren't seen before, and made him really that counterculture, anti-hero, merc with the mouth.
The Bugs Bunny
kind of, that whole attitude of who he is and who Ryan Reynolds plays in the movie. They got those guys added that.
It's pretty much based off of them, yeah.
Yeah, and it's a lot of fun because they kind of departed from the stereotypical kind of superhero. And they said, you know what, the fans are getting older. They're getting more mature. Give them something more mature to, you know, to read. And, you know, and they came up with, they added all these things to Deadpool. So it was actually kind of cool.
I find it funny that probably Marvel's most, maybe except for Howard the Duck, Marvel's most perverted character, his first ongoing series only gets 69 issues.
Yeah.
Well, I laughed pretty hard at that.
Yeah, that was probably by design too, I'm sure.
I would think it was, yeah.
You know, there was, you know, they understood the character pretty good. And, you know, it's, I love the idea, like, with, you know, there's so much stuff that's been done in comic books. And, you know, they've really scratched the surface. They've only scratched the surface in movies of what they've done in comic books, what they can put on screen. Deadpool is a really good doorway into what they can do next, or, you know, the characters that they can bring to the big screen. And, you know, I've read a lot of great stories, and maybe one or two of them have actually been translated to, like, you know, an animated film or a feature film, or just even snippets of put into a feature film. But you know, there's a lot of great stuff out there to read. You know, and you know, I recommend anybody to go to a comic book shop and check out the great stories that are, you know, built for not just for kids, but were built for older audiences and put together. The Vertigo stuff, the Swamp Things, the Alan Moores, the Frank Millers, the Neil Gaimans, the Sandmans, all this kind of stuff is out there. And it's just Deadpool is the first thing to kind of come through that's R-rated, that was a bit more mature than what would typically be out there. And it was nice.
Oh, it's going to open up a completely whole new world for us.
It's a whole new genre.
Oh, yeah.
Of you know, it's not just Iron Man and the Avengers banging around and Batman, Superman, and all this kind of stuff. It's something that's completely different.
This is slightly off the theme, but not completely, because where Deadpool is so related to the X-Men universe,
yeah,
he's actually, like, that movie is... I think classified as the 8th installment of the X-Men franchise.
Oh, really?
Even. Yeah.
Yeah.
I
don't think they'll be selling it in a box set with the X-Men movies. I'm pretty sure. It'd be like G, you know, 14A, hard R rating, Deadpool, and then, you know.
Well, even now, have you seen recently that because of this, Wolverine 3 is going to get greenlit with an R rating?
Yeah, and I heard that was going to be Old Man Logan's story.
Oh,
so that could be interesting.
You think it'll be his last?
Yeah, he said it would be his last.
It is, eh?
Yeah.
He's getting
up there. He's been playing this character for about almost 20 years now.
I thought the last one was going to be his last. I was actually surprised about this one.
Well, I don't know. Like, he is getting up there in years. But, I mean, it's got to be a hard character for him to walk away from. I mean, you know, Wolverine is probably in the top 5 greatest comic book characters ever created. Like, you know... At least a top 10.
Oh, I mean, well, when you got Frank Miller, you know, drawing the first pencils of him.
You know, and it's got to be a hard character. So, if he did, Hugh Jackman did the last movie and said, okay, I'll never do this one again. This is going to be the last one. And then it was a fairly big success. And then, oh, yeah, you're going to do it. I'll do it one more. You know, I'm looking forward to the next one that he does, because it's supposed to be the last one. He said it would be the last one, but who knows?
And if it does have that R rating, that's like, whew,
yeah, it's gonna bring in a whole other element to that character, because they really haven't. That's another character they really haven't scratched the surface of, you know. And they're really bringing them forth. You know, they were created as kids' characters originally, and now they're coming full circle. Daredevil was created as a kid's character. Do you think Netflix show is a kid's show?
No.
And same thing with, you know, when you see the Punisher is going to be showing up on it. The way he was originally created, the medium has grown with the audience, is what it is. And Deadpool is the first one to break through saying, okay, here's an R-rated comic book movie. It's going to be a lot of tongue-in-cheek. It's going to be a lot of sexual innuendo. There's going to be a lot of, like...
A lot.
This one's going to blow the doors off it, because, you know, you guys really need to understand that comic books weren't just written and drawn for kids. And, you know, that was a big thing. And it's a whole other audience, too. It's a whole other medium. You know, I went to see it with my wife and her sister and her husband, and they loved it. They'd probably never read a Deadpool comic in their life, but they loved the movie. Laughed her ass off throughout the whole thing. So, you know, it's offers something new, which is great. Because, it, you know, if a medium doesn't change, it dies. And fortunately, this medium will be around for a long, long time. Because look how long comic books have been around. You know, and because it has changed, it's grown, you know. It's an art form that's grown and changed over the years, over the decades.
And like drastically, too. Like,
yeah.
If you're looking at them, each like era,
yeah,
is like
exactly
completely different than the last one. It's ridiculous.
It's something for everyone. I mean, somebody can come to me and say, you know, I'm looking for comic books that my 10-year-old can read, and I'll recommend certain comic books. Then there's guys who'll come to me, you know, I read a lot of Shakespeare, or I read a lot of classics and stuff. Is there anything you can recommend? Yeah, you should really read.
You just hand them Sandman.
You hand them Sandman or Swamp Thing. Swamp Thing's Alan Moore Swamp Thing. There's so many great genres of this one medium that, I remember like years ago they wanted to really change the title of comic books, because they weren't really comic. You know, they weren't funny. They weren't all funny, and they changed the medium. Like, it's a great medium where it can be done. It's a visual medium, but most visual mediums had to do with movies or television. Well, that can be very expensive to put together, but if you get a guy who can write and a guy who can draw, they can create something just like that medium for a lot less money. And that was where the artistic nature of comic books kind of grew. So like they can make a movie, but it'll be a comic book, and it'll be, you know, a lot more artistic integrity put into it. They don't compromise the studios and stuff. It's just the comic book itself. Deadpool is a great variation of that, is that he was left by the writers and the artists and stuff with very, very minimal supervision going on to do what they want with that character. It grew from there, and now all of a sudden it's a hit movie. I was like, you know why? Because there was no studio executives that stepped in and said, oh, you can't do this, you can't do this, you can't do this. Because it was already a hit from the get-go, but it was a hit with a very small audience.
I really hope that this will allow for a Deathstroke film to come out, because you know my fascination with Deathstroke.
Yeah, there's a lot of great characters that, you know, have played off that violence, you know. And yeah, I mean, you're a big fan of Deathstroke. I'm a huge fan of Lobo.
Fair enough.
And I would love to see an R-rated Lobo movie, because that's another guy that breaks through the fourth wall. Lots of maiming, lots of killing, lots of, you know, the sexual innuendo, the violence, the language, all that's in there with that character as well. And Lobo is a great character for DC. And they need a franchise like this. They really do. And, you know, it's, you know, Punisher is another one. It's not so much comedic, but the violence is there as well. And they don't need to water these characters down. They're great for what they are. And, you know, they've lasted this long in a comic book medium. I can guarantee that they'll last just as long, if not longer, in a movie or television medium. You know, they just kind of got to keep them real.
That's it.
But, you know, there was a few things. Did you have anything else about comic
books? I was going to say, what do we actually know about the origin story for Deadpool?
I don't know. I mean,
I was kind of reading that his origin changes kind of frequently, because so much to the point where as the character is aware that he's a comic book character,
yeah,
and due to his mental illness, he actually can't remember his own origin. So you can change it as you're writing him, because he has no idea what it is himself.
Well, that's actually, you know,
isn't that weird?
It is pretty weird. Because, well, his mental illness makes him schizophrenic and all this kind of stuff, which gives him the ability to talk to the readers and talk to the viewers. So he's breaking through the fourth wall because of his dementia, which is actually kind of funny. That's a great plot device.
Right?
You know, it's like, who came up with this? But, you know, that hadn't been done before, you know, and you got to love that idea, because in their world of all the other superheroes standing around watching Deadpool talk to the reader, they're all like that. They're all invested now collectively in the idea that this guy's freaking nuts. He's talking to thin air. And, you know, it's actually kind of funny. It's a great plot device, because it includes the reader in the story in a way that hadn't been done before. So that was actually, that, you know, that's a great idea. It's a great idea for that character.
Yeah. Let's go right into the movie.
Sure.
Because I think that's where you were about to head, wasn't it?
Well, I made a few notes about the movie, because I really wasn't a big reader of the comic books when they were coming out. Like I said, I wasn't a big Rob Liefeld fan, so I didn't really follow his stuff so much.
Yeah, you've mentioned that a few times. I'm starting to think that you're really not a big fan of his at all.
Yeah. I mean, he gets credit for, you know, co-creating this character and stuff, but he really didn't add all the great elements to that character, so... And he's a terrible artist.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, those two that created him, that character's nothing like what they actually envisioned. So,
yeah.
What do you do?
Yeah, I mean, I love the we go into the movie and stuff, and there's the great opening sequence where none of the actors' names are listed.
Those credits are so funny.
Yeah, and it's basically flashbacks, because it's basically the car that, you know, the big action sequence on the highway, that big SUV, and it's flipping over and everything, and it's from that
original film. Before we get too much into it, I think from this point on, it's fair to say spoiler alert.
Well, spoiler alert, yeah. I mean, but the movie's been out for about a month now, so, I mean, if you haven't seen
it. A month? It's only been out for 2 weeks. It came out just before Valentine's Day, and it's only the 2nd of March.
That's, well, anyway, it just came out before Valentine's Day, but anyway, it's almost a month. But the thing is, like, you know, the great opening sequence, and nobody's names are listed, and it's all done to this, you know, great soundtrack and everything.
The soundtrack for this movie is
the soundtrack
unreal.
Is really cool. Actually,
it's so good.
You know, and you know, it's. I didn't get to see it. I only got to see it once in the theater because I've been quite busy the last few weeks. But I know
I
you,
saw it twice in less than 24 times. Hours.
Yeah. You know, and I really wanted to go. My boyfriend wanted to go back and see it right away too, right? But we just haven't had a chance to get back there. But it was a lot of fun. It's, you know, they definitely pushed the envelope and pushed the walls of, you know, what's allowed on screen, you know. And there was a few things I was reading about it. You know, it was just like, they really pushed the envelope. It was just something that hadn't been done before, you know, not just with comic book movies, but like with comedies or anything. Like, it was just kind of really, you know, something new, something fresh, and something unique that, you know, viewers hadn't seen before. So they were, Ryan Reynolds really played this up. Like, he really, you know, this guy should be given, like, you know, producer credit and everything for everything, all his just desserts. You know, belonged to that guy.
Oh, 100%.
You know, and it was great because, I mean, he did a Green Lantern movie years ago.
Can we
really,
not even talk about that on here? Really, the only reason why you're allowed to talk about it on this podcast is because he made fun of it in the movie.
Yes, he actually does make fun of it a few times. It's in the opening credits.
He's like, don't make the superhero suit animated.
But they show the Green Lantern card in the car crash.
Yes.
That's all rolling around in there. There's a lot of little in-jokes in there, right? But, I mean, you know, this franchise belongs to him. And it's great because he's Canadian. Go Canada. And,
go Vancouver.
Yeah. And, I mean, they shot it in Vancouver, too, I believe.
For most of it, yeah. I was reading that some of the stuff, like, when they're on the overpass. I heard, I was reading that the backdrop in there is actually taken from Chicago.
Oh, okay.
But. One thing I did see when I was reading is that when they were filming in Vancouver, they only filmed from March 23rd to May 29th.
From March to May, yeah.
It's very, very fast.
That is actually. Well, they usually shoot movies in about 6 to 8 weeks.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they do a lot. I mean, there's a lot of setup and everything. There's a lot of pre-production. That's not including the pre-production. And pre-production of films usually take
months. Yeah, that's not including
months.
Any of that test footage from like 4 years ago.
Yeah, that's nothing to do with that. You know, pre-production and post-production take months before and after. The filming of a movie is usually something like 6 to 8 weeks, something like that.
Did you notice, because the second time I noticed this, but I was trying to see if I could see like any little Easter eggs and stuff that maybe I missed before. But when they're on the overpass, one of the highway exit signs says Parker Boulevard.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's Peter Parker.
Yeah. I was looking at that. And I was like, oh, that's awesome.
There's actually a few of them in there that I kind of looked them up and I was like kind of making note of them and stuff. And, you know, there's the end credits scene. Here's another spoiler alert by the way, because... yeah, the end credits scene is...
if you saw this movie and you didn't sit and wait till the end of the credits like you're supposed to do with every Marvel movie that comes out, you screwed up.
Yeah,
I sat and waited twice.
Yeah, the end credits scene is a throwback and it's a real to the end credits of Ferris Bueller's Day Off from 30 years ago.
Which I didn't even notice. And I sat through it twice.
You know, 30 years ago, Matthew Broderick did the movie... Ferris Bueller's Day Off. It's a John Hughes film. People get out there and watch John Hughes films.
Kevin John Smith, Hughes is like the best filmmaker.
Yeah, he was great. He really captured the 80s, the 80s youth, especially. And Ferris Bueller's Day Off came out in 85, I believe. But I remember at the end credits, they're still showing some... The credits are rolling, but there's something on the side. There's pictures and images... Still, the movie is still playing. And then right to the end, it gets to the end of it, and the screen goes blank, and then all of a sudden the screen comes up, and it's inside the house of Ferris Bueller, and he walks out in his bathroom, and he says, go home, the movie's over. Go home, what are you still doing here? Go home. And that's at the end of Deadpool. And then he talks about Cable showing up in the sequel and things like this. And it was actually really cool, because that's the first end credit scene I've ever seen that I can remember. Ever seen was the Ferris Bueller one.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, like, as far as I know, they hadn't done it before. I couldn't remember one before that. So John Hughes kind of gets a little bit of credit for the scene at the end of Deadpool. And John Hughes, the late John Hughes, he's long gone now. But, you know, he was a great screenwriter and director and stuff, right? You know, anybody who's seen Planes, Trains, and Automobiles and all that stuff. But, you know,
16 Candles, Breakfast Club,
yeah.
National Lampoon's Vacation.
Yeah, he's done a lot of films back then. And he died so young, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it's too bad. But, yeah, Deadpool's closing credit scene gives credit to John Hughes. And it was actually pretty cool. There was a few other things in it, too. There was a mention of Liam Neeson's character in Deadpool as well.
When they're talking about Taken, he's like, when do we realize that he's just a bad parent?
Okay, that's a little joke at Liam Neeson at one of his first movies, which was in the 80s as well. It was around 1988 when Deadpool was around the time he was created kind of thing.
Okay.
There was a Clint Eastwood movie. It was a Dirty Harry movie. It's actually one of the last Dirty Harry movies.
Which one?
Called The Deadpool.
Oh. You just like blew my mind there. My brain shut off for a second.
And yeah, Axl Rose is in the movie from Guns N' Roses. And it's just a Clint Eastwood movie, but it's called The Deadpool.
Wow. Okay.
You've never heard of this Clint Eastwood movie?
Well, yeah. Clearly not. I'm like drooling on the mic right now.
Yeah,
this,
that was kind of a little throwback to if Liam Neeson shows up in a Deadpool movie, they really got to play, you know, or Clint Eastwood or somebody, you know, they really got to play up that little angle of is that there was a movie called The Deadpool. It's two different words.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, so they even his name isn't that original. They played it off something else, but there was a little. Neil nod towards Liam Neeson, and Liam Neeson did a movie called The Deadpool in 1988 with Clint Eastwood. He only has a cameo part in it. It's not a big part.
But, I laughed pretty hard when Ryan Reynolds says, like, oh, and this is my pride and joy, or some comment like that, and he grabs the toy from the Deadpool from the Origins movie.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I was laughing pretty freaking hard at that. That's terrible. Even that toy looked like shit. Yeah.
There's a lot of little nods in it that I thought, are they allowed to do that? I wasn't sure. Are they allowed to do that? And the big end fight sequence in the Deadpool movie is, and it looks like they're fighting on a destroyed helicarrier.
Yes.
The helicarrier was exclusive to the Avengers and the Marvel movies and Disney's Marvel movies.
Oh,
franchise.
My God, I didn't even think of that either.
So there,
you were all over this.
Yeah, that's actually a really cool reference, though. Like, you know, it's a nice tease, too, by the way. Because if they can pull the X-Men into... We now know Spider-Man is going into Civil War. If they can pull the X-Men. Seeing that helicarrier and stuff there? If they can pull the X-Men into the Disney Marvel Universe? You know, there you go.
I was having a bit of a thought the other day where if... Because... where Deadpool, the character Deadpool has a lot of inspiration from Wolverine as well.
Yeah.
With a rated R Wolverine movie, imagine a Deadpool cameo.
Yeah.
That would be sick.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be pretty cool, actually. And I like the idea, like, because Wolverine's so... I mean,
he's already been in a Wolverine film once.
Yeah.
Do it again.
Yeah, and the thing is, right. Like, Wolverine is such the complete opposite of Deadpool. Like in the comic books and the movies, he's like total serious, badass, you know, and Deadpool is that tongue-in-cheek kind of comic relief character. So the two of them in a movie together, it would play off pretty good. It'd be a real juxtaposition between the two of them. And it builds up for a great entertainment, you know, for the audience. So I do like the idea of, you know, Deadpool showing up in a Wolverine movie, and again, and but done properly, kind of thing, right? So I you know, that's actually kind of cool. I like the Deadpool is part of the X-Men franchise. I mean, that was one of the cool things in the movies when you see the mansion, the X-Men's, you know, Professor Xavier's school for gifted children, gifted youngsters, and I was like, oh, this is actually kind of cool. And then you see Colossus and all that showing up, and you're like, oh, this is...
How different is Colossus now? Do you remember the first time you see Colossus?
He's really
how small he was compared to what he was in the Deadpool movie.
In the Deadpool movie, the way he talks and the way he is, that's really close to the 80s Colossus of when he was first created. Because he's just basically this big farm boy from Russia.
Yeah.
That can, you know, turn into that. So he's kind of like that good guy, you know, big tough guy, but, you know, he's very youth oriented too, right? You know, and the Colossus that's in Deadpool is really close to the Colossus that was originally created in the 70s and 80s, especially the 80s when he was around. So, yeah, that's actually, they got him pretty accurate. You know, I wasn't familiar with the girl, the character she plays. I think she came later in the comics or something.
Yeah, I wasn't very familiar with her either.
You know, I do like, you know, there's a lot of stuff in it. There's a lot of comedy in it that really pushes, you know, are we going to offend people because of this movie? The big sex sequence goes on, and each one of them is a holiday.
Yes.
You remember this?
I did.
And
yeah.
I was like, okay, so it's Halloween, and he's underneath the sheets with, you know, Marina. And he's got the teeth on. He's got the Dracula teeth on. So there's that. There's another scene. The scene where he's basically being, you know.
Where he's getting a little dominated.
He's getting dominated. That's Women's International Day.
Oh, yeah.
That's the day. I was reading about this yesterday. I was like, I didn't know it at the time. But that's Women's International Day or something. And he's now being subjugated by his girlfriend. And I was like, okay. So, you know, there's the Thanksgiving, because I think they're covered in turkey
mashed
and stuff,
potato and cranberry sauce.
Like, you know, they basically ruined every holiday, every family holiday out there, you know, systematically throughout the calendar year by showing all, you know, by including them all in their sexcapades kind of thing of what's going on with Deadpool, right? So it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun to watch. And, you know, it was a very funny film to it was just something new. It was just, you know, I did enjoy it. It was actually pretty cool.
Do you, are there any other like Easter eggs you noticed that
I couldn't think of anything offhand. You know, it was just the, the Stan Lee is really obvious in there.
Yeah. You know, it was funny for me sitting there and watching that because I grew up in Vancouver.
Yeah.
And that strip club that they're in.
Yeah.
I've never been in, but I've driven past that strip club a million times.
Oh, okay.
The Number 5 Orange. It's like right downtown.
What's the name of it?
It's called the Number 5 Orange. All yeah. Right. it's been around forever. Like, I mean.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I know lots of people that have been in there before.
Yeah.
I've never been in there. I wonder if, like, I don't know, they must have cleaned it up pretty good because I've heard it's a pretty danky pretty danky strip club. Like, yeah. I knew this guy back home, no names or nothing, but, like, he came out of that and he was, like, itchy for a week. Yeah.
Sounds kind
of
sketchy.
He got a rash from being in that strip club.
Sounds a bit sketchy.
But when I saw it on the screen, my mind, like, blew up because I was like, oh, right, this whole thing's in Vancouver. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, and the Stan Lee showing up in it is actually pretty cool, too. He's just a DJ. It's probably the raciest cameo he's ever done is, you know, being a DJ in a strip club. And, you know, it was actually pretty cool. You know, there was a lot of stuff in the movie, like seeing Ryan Reynolds playing multiple roles in it, where he's basically the bartender and stuff in the bar, and without the makeup. So he kind of gets his, you know.
Wait, what?
You know the bartender that he goes and talks to all the time, he gets the notes from, and that's Ryan Reynolds. You know, in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know the bartender that's,
yeah,
he's not at the strip club, it's the bar where all these mercs all hang out.
Yeah.
Yeah. That bartender, and he's like, you know, talking about him being looking like an avocado to have sex with another avocado. That's Ryan Reynolds.
No.
Are you sure?
100%. That's the guy. That guy's the guy who plays the best friend from She's Out of My League, who's in the Hall & Oates cover band.
I don't know.
You've never seen that movie?
No.
No? Yeah, it's a totally different guy.
You sure?
100%. Yeah, that guy's like hilarious.
Ryan. Okay, maybe I'm wrong. I got to look this up.
You really confused me.
He looks like Ryan Reynolds.
Maybe a little bit, but it's definitely not.
Mm, I have to look this up.
Definitely not Ryan Reynolds.
All right. I'll take your word for it.
I'm going to win for the first time in our conversation.
Oh, really?
Ever. Yes. It's not Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah. Well, they got him done up in makeup and stuff, but to make him look different. But I was almost sure that was him. Okay.
You know what I found weird about this movie is, like, right now it's only the second highest grossing R-rated film. Yeah. But do you know what is the number one?
Yeah, it's Last Temptation of Christ. The Passion.
Is it?
Yeah, that's the number one R-rated film of all time. And I remember when that came out, that was a huge film. That's the one directed by Mel Gibson. Yeah, I can't remember what number two is.
Because
Deadpool was number three last time I looked.
Okay, because when I was looking recently, Deadpool had gotten up to like 600 million,
okay.
620 million or something like that.
Yeah.
And the one above it was in the 700 range, and that was Matrix Reloaded.
And the Matrix Reloaded is in there too. Because you got to remember, there's domestic and then there's worldwide box office.
Yeah.
So I think they're number three in the domestic. Because I don't think it's fully opened worldwide, like the movie Deadpool. But when it does, you know. But I think it was something like 60 or 70 million away from being the number one R-rated film of all time, which is pretty good because, like you said, it's only been out for a few weeks, and you know.
I didn't remember Matrix Reloaded doing that well.
Yeah, well, it was the sequel to The Matrix. Matrix was a huge movie in '99,
yeah.
So obviously the sequel would be pretty big, right? But yeah. It'll probably be number one before you know it, and they've already greenlit a sequel for it, and you know they said their Cable is going to be in it, so you know it's got a franchise. Ryan Reynolds has a franchise now, and it's all part of the X-Men, and it might actually reinvigorate the entire X-Men franchise too, right? Because you know, I think Wolverine's movies were kind of getting a little bit, you know, stagnant kind of thing, and you know the X-Men movies, and I do enjoy them, but they're all over the place. They're you know, trying to follow a storyline that keeps deleting itself in its movies.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm hoping Deadpool kind of is that boost that it really, you know, really deserved. And I mean, the other franchise that they own is the Fantastic Four. And we all know how that played out. So.
Yeah, The guy who plays the bartender,
okay,
Weasel,
yeah,
his name's T.J. Miller.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
What's the director's name of Deadpool?
Tim Miller.
Tim Miller.
Yeah,
it was really close. I was thinking that sounds really familiar. Okay. Anyway, I was staying corrected.
Yes. There you go. I finally win. It's only been a year and a half, but I finally win.
He does remind me of Ryan Reynolds. And when I seen him, I was like, oh, okay, so they, anyway, whatever. But, yeah, the film is, it's a great film. I recommend anybody out there who haven't seen it, go see it. And if you have seen it, go see it again. That kind of thing, right?
I was reading, I wish I could remember the exact number, but I was reading, I saw something about, like, that movie said fuck like 87 times in it or something like that.
Yeah, there was something like 87 F words, something like 100 variations of, you know, people having to do with sex or anything. And it was just all this, the language just pushed the envelope. And it, you know, it was like some kind of Scorsese film we were watching for language-wise. It was just so much over the top. Like, you know, it's like they just crawl. They, you know, they said, screw it, just keep going. You know, we've said it 50 times. I'd say it 80 times, whatever.
Oh, I mean, once you say it once, you might as well keep going.
Yeah, just keep going, right? And, but it became a running joke in it, too, right? It's just, it's a lot of fun to, you know, to view. But like us, like, you know, people who haven't seen it, don't take your kids to see that movie. Don't take little kids to see it. It's not for them. You know, it's just, you're going to be taking them out of the audience. You're like, oh, you're going to be uncomfortable about it. It's not for any little kids. It's an R-rated film for you know, the violence and the language and the sexuality. And
were you surprised at all with the naked fight scene?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, it was, probably not so much, actually, because once it was got to that point in the film, it was like, you know, the train was off the tracks. Nothing really surprised me at any point. I was just kind of sat there and I was just laughing my ass off, you know, because it was just so far. Like, the only thing I could compare it to is something like a Naked Gun movie that Leslie Nielsen had done like years ago. The Jim Abrams movies and stuff from years ago, is that like the jokes are just gonna keep coming at you like machine gun fire. Just try to keep up.
Oh, it was nonstop.
And it was just consistent like that. And that's what those movies were like. And, you know, that's what the Deadpool movie reminded me of, is that it just kept going and going and going and going and going and going. And just like, you know, try to keep up. You know, you're gonna miss some of the jokes. Because you're going
to
be laughing
too
hard.
You have to see it more than once just to take everything in. Yeah, it's
exactly. And, I mean, it's just, it was just like machine gun fire comedy, which is great, you know, because it hadn't really been done before for comic books. So, you know, it's just a phenomenal film to kind of like enjoy, right? And I'll end up buying it on Blu-ray and stuff just to, you know, multiple viewings and stuff, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. But, yeah, I couldn't think of really anything else that I had about Deadpool. You know, it was, I made a few notes and stuff here, but, you know, there was the opening credits scene and stuff, and it's the big chase scene that happens halfway through the film. So it's kind of flashing back on itself. That was actually, you know, a really interesting way to, you know, tell the plot and his origin as well, too, right?
One thing that, I'm going to put out there too now that I noticed, which is something that I wish more movies would kind of do.
What's that?
Do you notice that when you're watching the Deadpool trailer?
Yeah.
The majority of that trailer, all those scenes in the trailer take place on that overpass. So really that trailer was based off of like maybe 10 minutes of screen time.
Yeah.
It had nothing to do with the rest of the movie.
No, you kind of...
It was perfect.
You were going into a film without knowing where it was going.
Yeah, it's completely perfect.
Yeah, you know, and they've done this before with certain films where they would release a snippet of something, which really either took place right at the beginning of the movie or just something to do with, like, later on in the movie. And it's been done a couple of times where when you do go see the movie, you have no clue what the story is going to be like. And, you know, when you walked into Deadpool, you had no clue what you were going to get hit with. And, you know, that was the scenes in the highway and stuff. That was basically the same as what had been released a few years ago in that CGI Deadpool thing. Because he had kind of recreated that whole little thing he had done Ryan Reynolds had done a few years ago. And they included it in the film. There was a few variations, a few differences here and there and stuff. But it was basically the same thing. And they didn't shoot it like CGI as much. It was shot much, you know, much more professionally and much more, you know, better for the film. But having it in the trailer, yeah, it doesn't really add or take away. I was really interested in the fact that, like, a lot of that part of that movie does take place on that highway.
And, it does, yeah.
You know, it does take place on that highway. I was like, oh, this is really cool. Because they took that little, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 minute little short Deadpool thing, and they turned that into a big part of the plot for the movie. I was like, oh, that's actually cool. Because they're actually paying homage to the original that probably got 50 million views on YouTube. And, you know, this is what introduced the character.
Well, without that, you wouldn't even have the movie, right? So...
You also got to think, too, like that little video that came out a few years ago, that was pretty much the only education, you know, non-comic book readers had of Deadpool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that was a nice jumping on point for them. It was basically a comic book, 2 or 3 minutes to read or to watch or whatever. And here you go. You watch it. Okay, we're going to expand on that. And that was their introduction to it. So it was kind of nice because... they didn't need to really know a whole lot about the 20 or 25 years this character has been around. They just needed to know that 2 or 3 minute video. That's really clever, actually.
Yeah, it is.
You know, it's like putting a video out there, getting 20 million views with it. And it's like, oh, yeah, we're going to make a feature film. You're going to pay to go see the movie now. And all you're really going to need to know is that 2 or 3 minute YouTube video that you saw a few years ago. Not bad. And it was really well done back then, too. So
there's a there's something else that I found. I don't know if it was so refreshing towards the movie or if it just complemented it that well, but where Deadpool's character is like comic relief the whole time.
Yeah.
The amount of that movie that is shot outside during the day.
Yeah.
Really adds to that attitude.
Yeah.
It like, I don't know. It was just, it was bright. There wasn't a lot of dark tones to the film. Like you get a lot of dark tones in your super movie or superhero movies and stuff. Yeah. This one is like, hey, you know, I'm psychotic and we're out in the day and
it's nice
when you're watching it. It's visually impressive the whole time.
Exactly. And it's really true to the character too, because the Deadpool comics are not dark, like not visually. They're much more lighter, you know, very, very animated, very Warner Brothers, Looney Tunes kind of look to that, you know, to that character in the comic books. So they kind of took that and translated it into the film, you know, and, having them darkened up, which is all right and everything, it's supposed to give them that kind of, you know, futuristic, apocalyptic kind of look, that kind of thing, not quite our world, that's that kind of vibe to it. But you know, seeing Deadpool in the real world and this guy in the costume, and you know, this is the comic book character that we're all familiar with. So to see him like that, it makes him completely relatable, you know, too as well. So and they weren't watering it down. They weren't trying to make him look super cool or anything like this. They weren't trying to, you know, it was a nice element to it that brings him much more to life. And also, when we get back to like talking about going through that fourth wall, that's part of it too.
He did that a lot too.
Yeah, you know, it's really like, you know, it's a great plot device, like I said before, to talk to the viewers and to talk to the readers and stuff, and not have anybody else included in it. It gives you, as a reader or a viewer, it gives you that personal connection with the character. It's like, oh, this is kind of nice.
I think one thing that's key to the success of these superhero movies, these comic book movies specifically, but comic book movies specifically, is if you can be as true to the pages that you're reading as you are on screen with it, then you're not going to fail. I mean, Watchmen is the perfect example of it.
Yeah.
And Deadpool is probably the next best example of it. You know, whereas you don't change the content, you're gold.
Yeah. What's really great about it too, and they've stayed so loyal. Comic book readers are the most loyal fans in the world. The readers love the characters that were created 50, 60, 75 years, that kind of stuff. And they're so loyal to these characters. They're being transferred into the films. You know, heads up, people, because a lot of these characters die in the comics. Wait till the invested viewers see that happen. Because when we first read about these characters dying, that really took its toll. Like, that really hit the readers hard. Wait till you go see an Avengers movie or a Spider-Man movie or whatever, and the character dies right there in front of you, and you're like, ah. And that's going to, you know, take away. Because a lot of these characters do die in the comic books. A lot of times they were brought back and things like this, but, you know, it's a great idea of, like, where Deadpool is being brought along as well, is that they're making the movies so much like the comic books. Wait till they bring all the emotional part of what we as readers have been reading for decades. Wait till you're so invested in when you see your favorite character die on the big screen, you're like, and then all of a sudden it happens. And we've seen a little bit of it, so, you know, to a certain degree, but we haven't seen it with a major character yet. But it's coming, and it's gonna knock the wind right out of, you know, right out of your sails. It's going to be insane, you know. And that's one of the things I love about the idea. That's the other thing that Deadpool brings to the table, is that they made it so much like the comic book. Where do they start making them all like the comic book? And made we're all invested in it, and then all of a sudden it happens. It's going to add something else to it, and it's going to be very cool, because you're not going to look at comic books the same way. It's why we didn't look at comic books the same way, you know, is because we'd seen our characters get killed off or whatever. And so that's a great part about what Deadpool has brought, as a comic book that was very light, very entertaining and stuff, but they really expanded on it and made it more for an R-rated audience. And it was never really a kid's character anyway, not really. I mean, he was just too dark. He was just too dark-witted, and the violence involved in it and stuff, it wasn't written for like 5 or 10 year olds, so that's kind of interesting where it's all headed going down the road, right? And TVs and movies and stuff is going to bring all that along with it. It's kind of cool. I'm kind of excited about this genre.
Oh yeah. And we're glad it's there.
Yeah, it's coming. It's kind of interesting, when I think about it. But that was it. That was pretty much all I had, though, for everything about Deadpool.
Well, that's good, because that's all the time we have for today's episode anyways. So,
well, thanks for having me, Ryan.
Oh man, it's been a blast. So, to all those out there, thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening, guys.